Customized Build Agents with Ahmed Ilyaz.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host, for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. And I'm doing a lot of this online user group speaking, you know, all around the country, straight from Texas. But if you are in a .NET or Azure-related user group, I'd love to give a presentation for you. And our sponsor for today is ClearMeasure, and they make this podcast happen. They're a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. So if they can help, go ahead and get in touch. And also be sure to check out the new video show that I've started up called Architect Tips. And we have an exciting guest for today. Our guest is Ahmed Ilyaz. Ahmed is a previous Microsoft employee and a Microsoft MVP who has a lot of passion and enthusiasm that he shares. And he believes in providing the best practices and solutions to any customer, virtually any industry, and likes to see those solutions put into practice. His personal goal for every project is to make sure that clients and customers are happy, but also to make sure that he delivers the best possible solution to them and enables them to succeed further in their line of business. That, to Ahmed, is a true sense of accomplishment and achievement. He doesn't focus on one specific programming language or technology, but across the whole Microsoft stack of not only development tools and languages, but also business-to-business applications like Microsoft CRM. Also, being a Microsoft vendor allows them to input more into the organization and get more out from the organization, too, to better prepare for the shape of technology in the future. So welcome, Ahmed, to the Azure DevOps Podcast. How are you, sir?
Good. Thank you. How are you today, sir?
I'm good. Welcome to the show. And we have a lot to talk about because you've done a lot and got to get into it. But like we ask all of our guests before we get in, for those who maybe haven't heard you speak or whatnot, what's your journey? You were at Microsoft for a while. You've also done some projects, but just done a ton of things and a pretty extensive career. Back us up, you know, to close to the beginning. What have been some of the high points?
You make me sound like I'm an old person now.
We all are.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember when I was a young kid, you know, I don't know, maybe I was 6 or 7 years old. For some reason, I got into computers. My family, you know, we weren't rich or anything like that at all. We didn't have the luxury of having a computer. And there was something on TV. I don't know what it was. I can't remember. But there was something there that made me like, oh, that looks pretty cool. And since then, I've kind of wanted to know, how are things made? So when you're a child, you want to kind of explore a lot of things. You know, how is this built? How is that done? Kind of the mechanics of those types of things. So that kind of drove me, I guess, to be an engineer of sorts. And I knew by the time I was maybe 11, 12, something like that, hey, I want to work at Microsoft. That was it. There's probably something on TV with Bill Gates, maybe back in the day, that caught my attention, perhaps. But there was just something there that I wanted to get involved with computers. And that's basically what I wanted to do, was just pursue that dream, pursue that that kind of career. But at the time, it was more of a hobby for me. I believe that you should do something you love doing and not for the sake of doing something. You'll enjoy things a lot more. You'll be hopefully more on top of your game. It doesn't always have to be business, you know. If you enjoy what you do, go for it. It doesn't matter what it is, whether you're in computers or want to be a surgeon, whatever it is, follow that dream. So I started to contribute to online forums. I got recognized. I got in touch with a few folks internally at Microsoft. And I was in the UK at the time because that's where I was born and raised. You might not hear from the accent, but that's where I was born and raised. And a few folks caught my attention. They reached out to me. I kind of did some stuff for them. And then I got an internship at Microsoft, did the internship successfully, finished off my degree, my master's degree, went back into Microsoft again. Yeah, I was doing different types of software development at the time. So in the UK, there isn't like a specific product. It's more about just overall business, like, you know, things to develop for the county or for your local, you know, regional companies or whatever it may well be, the kind of consulting type of business.
Okay.
And my dream was to eventually move to the mothership. 20 plus years later, I'm here. it was just all about how do things work? You know, when you double click a program, how does it work? How do you boot into Windows or Unix or whatever? That was the kind of drive that I had.
And so you're in Redmond now, in the Seattle area. And so you kind of did work in the mothership. And then you'd also done some other projects. What would have been the high points there?
It's been both, actually, both inside and outside of Microsoft. I think outside of Microsoft, the high point, I think, was converting VB6 apps into .NET.
Mm, there's a lot of those.
Oh, yeah. And it's the same with, you know, Visual Fox Pro as well. And I think everybody knows the story about that. You know, the time came when VFP was coming to end of life, and there's like a whole surge of, you know, hey, we want to move to .NET and all these kinds of things. Same thing with VB6, excuse me, at the time. And I did a lot of conversions, VB6 to C#, developing proof of concepts before being awarded the project, for example, designing services. How would these work? You know, how can we still continue to not break the existing system, but also make sure that it's flexible enough so then the customers can continue to build on top of it. I think that's probably the highlight, I think, was, wow, we can actually do this stuff. We don't have to, you know, we don't need to use the tools. There's great tools out there. There's great code conversions out there, I'm sure. I've used one or two of them myself, but for some of these projects, it was just manual. It's like, let's look at the code. Let's look at the old code base. Let's run it through. Let's see what happens. Let's, you know, translate the code into C# and .NET. And we get the benefit, you know, of .NET at mm-hmm. the time, of course. That was definitely one of the highlights. Inside of Microsoft recently, I think the highlight here was the fact that I was working in Azure DevOps, the product group itself. Fantastic, fantastic engineers. Completely blown away by the talent. still to this day, just completely blown away. So many different teams, feature teams, you know, three or four engineers per team, perhaps. It's a big, big system. And you know, your listeners, your viewers, know all about Azure DevOps, hopefully. Mm-hmm. Majority of them are using Azure DevOps. I know that ClearMeasure is using Azure DevOps as well, of course. It's such a big, big product. A lot of thought has gone into it. I think we've all seen the evolution of going from source safe to TFS on-prem to then Azure DevOps, you know. It's great.
Well, I'd like to remind everybody that with the growth of our industry, about half of the people writing code today just entered the workforce just 7 years ago. So, you know, that means that a small minority actually remembers these transitions, you know, a full half. Anything that happened before 7 years ago, maybe they read about or heard about from somebody else, but that's about it. Speaking of that, let's dig in at what the cool parts of the, you know, some of the internals of Azure DevOps. What areas did you work on specifically and go deep on?
So this was more about maintaining the engineering system. So Azure DevOps is built on top of Azure DevOps.
It's a little bit recursive.
Right. that's exactly it. There's there's so many moving parts to it. You know, yes, it was, you know, it's been a lot of challenges, like with anything. But, you know, my job at the time was maintaining that, improving on it. How can we best deliver productivity for our engineers? How can we unblock them? How can we make something easy for them? You know, as most people can imagine, it's massive code base, really, really big. How can we get developers to have quality PRs? How can we get them to quality master builds? And finally, what about testing? What about if you wanted to do a deployment at the drop of a hat? We haven't, thankfully, had to do that, where we just say, oh, you know, right now we need to do deployment. It's more about the sprints are every 3 weeks. And on the last day of the sprint, one of my responsibilities was to do a cutoff of the branch. Mm-hmm. The branch cutoff process is as follows, where we create the branch from the master, we lock it down so nobody can check in their commits whilst, you know, we're kind of, you know, creating the branch cutoff. The applying the policies, the security policies, like we don't just want anybody to go ahead and check stuff in, because, you know, it's pretty much a solidified sprint at that point in time. So it has to go through like an approval process from the managers and so on and so forth. And any other relevant security groups or teams that need to be involved in, based upon, say, the type of file, you know, the type of file that you're modifying. It could be an XML file. It could be something else. So all of these kind of policies, again, built within Azure DevOps. Once everything is approved and everything is set, unlock the branch, and hey presto, we have, you know, the branch cutoff. Now, in terms of the quality checks, that's obviously one of the fundamental things that Microsoft does: security and quality. It can take, like I was saying, anything from, you know, 1 to 2 hours to find out if the release is good, because there's so many tests that happen, so many different tests, L0, L1, L2 tests.
Well, tell us about those. And when you say so many, how many in rough numbers do you recall? How many zeros behind the one?
If I remember, it may be something like, I want to say between 8 and 10 different types of tests or environments that need to be set up. So we have like L0, L1, you know, quick tests, quick integration tests. And then we have other much more strenuous tests that set up the environment, set up the system, and run just a whole suite of tests. It could be integration, most definitely, of course, with Azure itself, making sure that, you know, things are A-okay, you know. And within each of the tests or the types of tests, again, this varies depending on the level of tests. I have seen up to, I think it was like either 13 or 14 agents per run, mm-hmm. per release. And the reason, again, is for resiliency testing, to make sure that, you know, there's no abnormal issues that could occur. We want to make sure that things are consistent. So that's why we have it running on so many different agents. So there might be the same build, the same master build, but we're running, you know, 13 or 14 of them at the same time.
And how many are we talking about? 1,000 tests, 10,000 tests, 100,000 tests?
I honestly can't say. I haven't looked that much in depth, but I can tell you there's definitely quite a lot of tests and a lot of different types of tests. That particular part was probably out of my scope at the time.
Yeah.
But definitely when I'm monitoring it, you know, I'm saying, okay, well, how quickly are these tests running? Are we having any other types of issues? It could be infrastructure issues. It could be a service outage somewhere, which could be out of the scope for DevOps, because of course we integrate with Azure, right? We're kind of doing authentication. We're kind of using Service Bus, Key Vault, all these offerings from Azure. Azure DevOps utilizes them. I remember as I'm sure everybody has, you know, where if a service goes down in Azure, sometimes it can have a knock-on effect, mm-hmm. Which means that any releases that are currently running, it could be builds or it could be releases, they could potentially be impacted. So we have to have a plan. And a plan, generally speaking, should be where we lock the branches. Because what we don't want to do is we don't want code being checked in. And potentially that code could be bad, but there's also an outgoing, there's also an outage that is currently ongoing. So it might be where, you know, maybe that code got checked in whilst the outage was going on and that code is potentially bad. It could be. But as a safety precaution, that is probably the best practice, is to lock the branch, monitor the service until it gets healthy, and then unlock the branch.
Okay. So it sounds like you and your team, y'all really put the build agents, the worker pools, you really put them to work and pushed them. Did you ever push them to their limit?
I want to say probably yes. I'm absolutely sure that we have done so. Kind of, you know, towards the end of the project, of the engagement. So the way that it generally works is there was another team internally that provisioned us virtual machines, a whole bunch of virtual machines in a pool. And whenever, you know, we have the agent pool, whenever there is a build ready to go, it would pick up the next machine in the pool, run its stuff, mm-hmm. throw away the virtual machine and reimage it. And there's a reason why we do that, and I'll explain that shortly. But we were also now investing in using VMSS, which was an offering in Azure called Virtual Machine Scalesets. So we were kind of dogfooding that. We were also integrating, obviously, with Azure DevOps. And now, you know, publicly it's available. You can use Virtual Machine Scalesets as well as your own, you know, servers if you want, or any other offerings from Azure. And we would push the limit. Sometimes it got to the point, I think, where we might have a lot of builds running which are completed. We might have, say, all of a sudden peak time would be, I don't know, say Thursday afternoon, and we would have maybe 15 or 20 releases being kicked off. Multiply that by the amount of tests that we have. So sometimes we do see that, you know, we have jobs being queued up. At that point, we know, okay, number one is peak time, and we might need to provision more VMs to catch up sometimes. But yeah, we definitely tested that. We definitely did a lot of that. It was interesting, really. The concepts that came up, the reasons why we do things, yeah.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
And an Azure subscription has a CPU core limit. So if you guys have that configuration, I bet your CPU core limit was sky high.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely. So the way that it works, just to kind of have a quick overview, you know, we can set up the virtual machines based on a particular type of SKU that the Azure has. You know, it could be like a D3 V2, it could be DS V2, DS V3. Just depends on the type of virtual machine that you want. Some of them have 2 cores, 4 cores, 8 cores, and so on and so forth. So we need to pick the ones which are not as costly. So it's kind of like a toss-up between cost and performance and the productivity, meaning we don't want to block engineers either. Mm-hmm. So that's always the tricky part, is finding that right balance. But yeah, we used, I believe, D3 V2 VMs. But then for our P0 runs, like our high and hot intense runs, we would, you know, up, and we would use different SKUs for that, like DS13 virtual machines. So yeah, quite a lot going on there. And once we provision the VMs, we use them, we toss them away, and have the pool basically re-image the virtual machine again. And the reason is simple. We don't want to have to figure out, okay, if the last release failed for some reason, you know, what do we need to delete from which registry, for example? What about settings? What about the files and disk? All this, it can take a lot of time. Sometimes, you know, we might have an issue where Windows is locking a file. I think we've all been there for one reason or another.
Oh, yeah.
So the best thing to do is just start clean, fresh. Mm-hmm. It's quicker and cheaper.
Yeah. Now, for people using Azure Pipelines today, what are the options that they have with the hosted pools that they should, you know, either take advantage of or not leave just as the default, in your opinion?
It's an excellent question. Most of the time, you know, customers are happy using the default Azure Pipelines. You can, of course, go the extra step. As we explained, you can use, you know, virtual machine skill sets for, you know, high loads, for example. Even create your own pool and host them yourselves. So it is a completely, there's no right answer to that. It's totally dependent upon your needs. I know customers who are security conscious. They don't want to host anything in Azure. Totally get that. I respect that. They would rather host their own pools and kind of do it that way. That's kind of my understanding and my taking, actually. I've noticed that a lot. There's definitely customers that, you know, there's some pushback there. And the beauty about Azure is that we give you all those options. So, yeah.
Now, there's quite a few people who are who need, say, the default agent, but there needs to be just one more thing installed on the default image. Today, in your opinion, what's the most straightforward way to get, you know, just an extra dependency on that hosted agent so that they can use it?
Yeah. Personally, I have not used the default agents. That's just not what we've used ourselves, because we have different strict requirements. Generally speaking, the best way probably would be to create an image yourself. Could be Ubuntu if you want, could be a macOS, could be Windows. Create the image, install the necessary software that you need to install. Once you have that image, you can sys prep it and then either have it just as an image or publish it to a shared image gallery. That means that you have a solid image that you can reuse again and again and again. And this is the stuff that we've actually done for our migration to VMSS, to virtual machine skill sets, that I was talking about earlier, because we do have some, you know, some software that we do use, SQL Server, for example. And you were talking about this one little thing, but, you know, mm-hmm. we do use SQL Server.
Right.
And yeah, we create the image, we bake the image, we publish it to a SIG or a shared image gallery. And we then basically said in the virtual machine skill set in Azure, instead of using this VM here, just use the one that we're actually publishing in the shared image gallery. So for every time there's a VM that gets imaged or re-imaged or created, it just looks at the latest version in that particular shared image gallery and just uses it. That definitely would be the way to go. I've seen an uptake in customers using that approach, definitely. And the beautiful thing about Azure DevOps is, again, it's all about automation. Automation is the key. Making sure that, you know, we have a lot of productivity, that there's less human errors. So, you know, you can build an image in Packer, for example, create a release definition, have a Packer image, do what you want with that image. And then finally, you can use some, say, PowerShell scripts, if you like, to go ahead and publish it to a shared image gallery. All automated.
Okay. Awesome. It's always good to hear, you know, from someone who's probably pushed these things to the limits more than most developers, even that are just using those.
One kind of key piece there is make sure that if you are going to do the shared image gallery approach, make sure that the replica count is a good amount. So instead of saying replica count being one, let's say if it's peak time, well, there's going to be a bit of a throttle that's going to happen there. So maybe up it to maybe three or even four. So, so it's kind of, fast and it picks it up quick and, there's less kind of contention, shall we say.
Yeah. That's a good point. Even with just doing everything hosted, there's that drop down that oftentimes comes with a price, which is how many parallel jobs do you want to support? And parallel jobs can get used up pretty quick if something's deploying to production. If you have three environments or seven, well, you could have a build deploying to all of those environments at the same time. Now you got seven parallel jobs. Or you could have multiple developers all working on a feature branch and you have your integration build on a feature branch. That could be a parallel job. There's nothing worse than a developer saying, okay, go. And then we realize, oh, we got to wait. I can't go yet. So now you've, with all your work, not only in the product team, but also using it, are there any tips or tricks that have been interesting to you for how things that you've observed of how Azure DevOps works under the hood that's not immediately apparent, but that you thought, oh, I'm so glad I found that out?
Yeah. I guess this is kind of, again, going back to kind of, the agent pools, and the only reason that it sticks out like a sore thumb is because, even as developers, if you're building something, you're testing something, sometimes you do get your fingers burnt. And that's just part of the process, part of the cycle, part of learning. One thing for sure is make sure that you have enough networking ports. For example, what I mean by that is if you are running hundreds of virtual machines, in a VMSS environment specifically, make sure that you have enough ports open. Otherwise, it is not going to pick it up. We're going to have some port exhaustions as well. And that you'll be trying to figure out what's going on here. So that's definitely something that I have learned, is to make sure you have enough ports open or allocation, I should say, the enough allocated ports in the VMSS. Setup. And, of course, you can create the VMSS, yourself manually, or even better would be using ARM templates, automated deployments, etc. So make sure that you don't forget have enough ports.
Okay. Now, with your experience and seeing a lot of things, fast forward us, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, what things that are hard today do you see as getting easy just because they'll start to become normalized, or tools will be developed around? And what things do you think will never be solved and people just will have to get good at that?
Man, you're really putting me on the spot here. It's a very good question. It's an answer I don't have right now. Wow.
Well, right now, database deployments, changing a database, it's still hard. To this day, it's still hard. Making environment changes in Azure. Okay, create an environment, yeah. But, now I need to change something about the environment. That's still hard.
It is hard. You're absolutely right. It is hard, difficult for these things. I'm sure, given the fact that, we're living in... we're kind of living in the cloud, with Azure and all these, and AWS and all these kind of cloud companies now. We're doing a lot of churn. We have a lot of different environments that we're creating. How can we make that easier and better? Yeah, of course, absolutely. Again, automation is the key. Is there a way to make it less painful? I think that we are kind of getting there slowly. I definitely think that. I think the kind of rapid improvements that are happening with ARM templates, for example, is certainly heading in the right direction. I do think that there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. I think that there's just so much tech out there. It's sometimes, and I feel it too, that it's difficult to navigate. But just make sure that you have that clear goal in mind, the clear direction that you want to go into. And I know that when there's a pattern that's happening, I know that companies will look at that pattern and kind of figure out how can we solve this problem, especially now when we have things like, you know, AI and ML, you know, machine learning. I do think that it's going to certainly help bring those patterns more visible to us humans, and to take action to solve these problems, you know, difficult problems, like you're saying, environment changes. How can we make that easier? How can we make that simpler?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have things like Docker, right? It's a great thing. Definitely, absolutely step in the right direction. And it's been around for a little while. Again, I still think that there's a long way to go. And I'm sure that we will definitely get there in the next 5 years. I really do think so. Things are moving so fast. There's a lot of rapid development. Things that used to take maybe 10 years now is like more than half the time. You know, it could be 3 years now. Mm-hmm. I've definitely seen that that pattern.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Well, as our time kind of wraps up, as listeners have been listening, is there any go-to resources that if listeners want to kind of dig in more and get going and do some customization with the agent pools or other parts of Azure DevOps, are there any go-to resources that you particularly love for people to dig in and take the next step?
I hate to say it, but definitely docs.microsoft.com. There's a lot of stuff in there for Azure DevOps. Definitely, you know, take a look. Content is always being updated. It's always being updated. And of course, you know, with our sponsor Clear Measure, reach out. Any questions, you know, that our listeners have, reach out to Clear Measure. I'm sure that they will love to help out there.
I'm sure they would. Sure they would. All right. Well, hey, Ahmed, thank you for coming on the show and visiting with us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.